Welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
I'm Mike Wislin.
And this is Please Leave a Message. This is episode 26, so this is season 2, episode 8.
Wow, that's complicated.
Yeah, so you can find us at pleaseleavemessage.com. We're on iTunes, and we're also on TuneIn. I got us onto TuneIn because I wanted to say, hey Alexa, play Please Leave a Message podcast.
Nice.
It took me like 3 weeks to get it working, but it does work sometimes when she hears you right.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that we discuss that's like visual, we'll post pictures on the on Instagram at Message Podcast. And the reason we are called Please Leave a Message is because we have a phone number you can call into and you can leave a message. So that phone number is 801-SKETCH-1, and that's 801-753-8241.
Sketch 1, SKETCH-1.
Yes.
Huh.
That's our number.
Cool.
So call in and leave a message. I just found out a couple weeks ago that the custom message that I had recorded for that phone number wasn't working. And so people would call in and they were like, I don't know what this number is. And I'm wondering if that's why nobody calls in or no one leaves messages. But I fixed it this week.
All right.
So there's a custom message on there. If you call in, you will hear me and I will greet you and invite you to be on the show.
So what kind of messages are you looking for?
We like spooky stories.
Oh, okay. So is this call in with a story?
Call in with a story. We like embarrassing stories.
Mm-hmm.
We like silly stories.
Mm-hmm.
Stories about rare audio.
Oh, rare audio.
Mm-hmm. So
that's where I come in.
Suggestions for found audio.
Mm-hmm.
So anything like that.
Roger that.
So give us a call, 801-SKETCH-1. All right, Wiz, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I grew up there. I was born in the year 2113, moved to 2123 in the time machine. That sucked, so we moved back to 1991. I'm 275 years old, if you count all the jumps back and forth.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But in 1991, I ended up in Utah. That's where the time machine broke down, so I'm stuck here with you guys.
So here you are.
With your incredibly droll technology. But anyway, I am a scientist, engineer, physicist. I worked for several companies in aerospace doing top secret stuff. And gave that up a few years ago. And I just focus on teaching at Utah Valley University.
So I was trying to look something up the other day. And I came across that website called Rate My Professor.
Ah.
Have you seen that site?
Hate My Professor is what we call it, yes.
I actually ran across your page. I wasn't even looking for it.
I'm sure there's tons of good stuff.
Well, what was very interesting is there was no middle ground.
Oh, no.
They either hated you or they loved you.
It's like the Three Stooges. And it's true. And it's true with most, you know. And really, in those types of troll postings, you're either there. You're there for a reason. You know, you love this person or you hate them. If you're in the middle ground, you're probably not motivated enough to go there and post. So
right.
That's sort of why there's no middle ground on those types of websites. You know.
Yeah.
It takes some motivation to get out there and say something. Usually negative, because it's almost always trolls.
Right.
But yeah, occasionally there's, you know, 1 out of 10 might be positive. This is why we call it HateMyProfessor.com.
Yours was split almost 50-50.
Huh, that's pretty good.
So,
and what does that mean?
I don't know.
That's the signal for, let's play a song.
Okay.
I'm just throwing that in there.
What did you bring for us?
Well, I brought everything back to, I brought a cylinder with me, which is kind of fun, an Edison cylinder from about 1917, I'm guessing. Plus, I brought armloads of power pop CDs. I brought some Neon Trees stuff, because I recorded their first album, so I have some interesting insights to that first record. That one now sells. The last one sold for $256 on eBay.
Wow.
So I figure, there's fans out there, and there's not many copies in existence, so that's become a pretty rare record. Also, being from St. Louis, I got a lot of St. Louis bands that I love to play. And I got some music that's lost and found. And really pleased to find out that Lakeshore Drive by Aliotta Haynes and Jeremiah is on the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. And you know, it, that's fantastic. That'd be one of those songs that's found audio. But now it's discovered audio. And out there, it's a Chicago band, Aliotta Haynes and Jeremiah, did a 1971 LP. It was really just kind of hippie, drugged out rock music.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the songs ended up in some producer's hands, and it's absolutely brilliantly produced, sung, arranged. And it's called Lakeshore Drive. And it's, you know, or LSD, as it is referred to in its own song. But LSD, of course, everybody knows in Chicago, that's Lakeshore Drive. So it's a song about cruising up and down Lakeshore Drive. That obviously was a Chicago favorite, but it leaked 6 hours south to St. Louis, probably up to Milwaukee. So it was this Midwestern kind of classic, but really didn't get anywhere in the charts except for the local stations. So I was thrilled to death to find it on the Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I'm sitting there in the movie going, wow, Lakeshore Drive, where did they find that? I was, because it's even hard to find it on CD. Finding the LP is next to impossible, and finding the CD is just as impossible. I have both, fortunately. I got the original album and found a German copy on CD, and it was only released for like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I snagged it. I'm one of the few people that own that as well. So, thrilled to death. It's in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Go see it. It's in the opening sequence.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah, it is.
So, Wiz.
What?
I hear you like Sundance.
I've been known to see a film or two.
So, I hear Sundance just got over.
Sundance 2018 just got over. And for me, that goes all the way over into the following Monday, where they have the Best of Fest, which is a lot of fun. So, are you interrogating me for the good and the bad?
Yeah, let's hear a little bit.
What do you want?
Let's go with the good.
Okay. Documentary? Drama? Take your pick. Horror? Comedy?
What was your favorite?
My absolute favorite film. A Futile and Stupid Gesture is the story about Doug Kenny, the co-creator of National Lampoon. Of course, that was started at Harvard. Then, after graduating Harvard, the two of them went on to create National Lampoon magazine, which parodied literally everything they could think of, garnishing them all kinds of hate mail, and all like, as you would expect from any satire that's well done. Because satire is sort of like, you got to stick the knife in, then twist it a little.
Just a little.
Just a little. And that's what National Lampoon did. So eventually that magazine did quite well, as is depicted in the film. And they went on to do, obviously, the National Lampoon albums. After they do the albums, they decide, hey, maybe we could do movies. So this movie depicts the whole story of National Lampoon leading up to sort of the characters they have, John Belushi, you know, Bill Murray, and that whole gang, that eventually became the first cast of Saturday Night Live. And then they move on to tell the story of the movie years. Of course, you know, Animal House
right. And
Caddyshack. Mm-hmm. Those are all creations by Doug Kenny.
And it's not a straight documentary.
It's not. It's a docudrama. And this is the beauty of it. Doug Kenny is played by the guy that does Last Man on Earth.
Okay, yeah.
And he does a really good job at it. But Martin Mull is sort of the narrator, and he plays old Doug Kenny.
Oh, okay.
And they even mock the whole docudrama format, because Martin Mull will just walk in the middle of a scene as it's going down, all the craziness of the office of creation of National Lampoon magazine. And he just walks into the frame and starts explaining stuff as if he's not there. So he's sort of this break the fourth wall kind of character that just stomps around in the middle of the movie explaining what's going on. So it's a very unique form of storytelling, and I don't think anybody's done anything quite like it. It's really, I think, it's a very sharply written movie. The screenplay is sharp, the editing is tight, and the edits are amazing. You know how you've seen some of those commercials that they're doing now that edit one scene and it somehow magically unfolds into something else?
Right.
They use that technology in the film to good effect. It's incredibly good storytelling. It's got the highs, the lows, the cocaine, everything. It's rated R for reality.
Okay.
You know? So, yeah, it's a super fun film. It's available on Netflix now. You can just go watch it.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And that was not in the competition at Sundance. It was called a premiere.
Oh, okay.
And Netflix premiered it there, and it was in the midnight film category, which is in their comedy slash horror or combination films that they usually have on the midnights. So anyway, that was my pick at the festival for the docudrama comedy, you know, lineup.
Right, right. Cool.
Do you want to talk about another one? How about best documentary?
Okay, let's, yeah.
Gosh, there's so many good documentaries at Sundance, it's hard to pick. But I think Dark Money was maybe one of the most revealing. That's the Supreme Court decision about Citizens United, allowing any corporation or individual, and they don't have to be from the United States, to pour an unknown amount of money into anybody's political campaign. So that's why it's called dark money.
Right.
You don't know who's buying out your senator, right?
Right.
And so it's a rather revealing documentary. I consider it very important because, really, right now, a lot of our senators are being bought out by dark money, special interest groups.
Yep, definitely.
So that's a good film to see. But there's also other great documentaries at Sundance.
Such as?
Well, you know, for children, I went to a documentary called Science Fair, and it followed six kids in either junior high or high school with their science projects. And they follow through until they come to completion. I saw 30 films this year, so it's hard.
So one or two.
One or two. And there's 30 films in 11 days. So, you know, that's, yeah, it's a lot of movies. They all kind of blend in on those five film Saturdays.
Well, I imagine they would.
Yeah. I would pick out a film called Three Identical Twins. That's a movie, literally, about three identical twins that discovered each other somewhere around the age of 19. And the interesting thing is, it's now we're looking back at them from the age of about 56 years old, and they're looking back on their lives and kind of summing it all up. And recently, they discovered the reason why they were separated at birth. And that's where the film takes a slightly darker twist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As it turns out, it was part of a psychological experiment.
Whoa. What?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I should tell you the end of the film, because I'd like to entice you to see the film. Three Identical Twins comes out soon. A Sundance favorite of Wiz. You know, as long as I'm talking about Sundance films, it's and documentary films, another one that exposes sort of the dark side of the internet, and I don't mean the dark web, but I mean the stuff you don't see on the internet because it's been cleaned off.
Oh, okay.
And the film is called The Cleaners, and those are the people that uphold the standards of Twitter and YouTube and, of course, Facebook being the big one. And so when people post things that violate their policy, it's the cleaners' job to remove it. These are third-party companies that these large corporations hire to do the cleaning for them. And so it's, you know, pictures of that are in violation or videos that are in violation of the agreement. And that would, you know, the obvious thing is porn. But look beyond that. It's also terrorism videos. It's beheadings.
Mm-hmm.
They interview a woman whose job is to simply watch videos and remove them for terrorist content. And she's literally watched hundreds of beheadings. Think of that kind of a job and how that would weigh on you. So they talk about the people that have to do this and what load they bear, you know?
Right.
And if they're good Christian people and they see all this pornography day in and day out and they have to go click, allow, click, delete, click, allow, click, delete. And they literally have to make a decision one every 8 seconds. They literally have to go through 20 to 25,000 pictures in a day to keep their job. So it's really a stressful job. It's an interesting look at the people that have to keep the internet clean. It's The Cleaners, coming out soon. Sundance film. One of my other favorite Sundance films was the Robin Williams documentary.
Oh, I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah. So it's about time. Don't you agree?
It's definitely about time.
And Robin Williams, of course, had a wonderful career, ending in his suicide just a few years ago. The film really does go into his, you know, tortured self.
Right.
And it's both a hilarious film, because they do go in and get, they dig for the deep stories that either you've never heard before, or gosh, I long forgot about that. And so it's all pulled out into a wonderful edited documentary. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Just look for Robin Williams documentary. You'll love it. It is rated R.
It's Robin Williams.
It's Robin Williams. Well, I went to a film at Sundance called Believer. That's a film that's done by the lead singer of Imagine Dragons, and along with the help of the lead singer of the Neon Trees. The film is about gay or transgender people in the Mormon religion who both are troubled by their LGBT-ness and also they're at odds with the LDS Church. So the suicide rate in Utah is skyrocketing as a result of this, and it's their attempt to resolve this by at least talking to somebody and letting them know that they are loved by God. And that statement there is what got them, the LDS Church, to sign on 2 weeks before the Love Loud Festival, which was held in Orem, Utah. And that's how the film sort of culminates at that concert. At the end of the film, it says, "We will continue to have these concerts once a year until they're no longer needed." I thought that was a great way to end the film. So it's just a discussion on, hey, let's stop the suicides and let's talk.
Right.
And that was the main message of the film. It's not preachy on either side. Let's go into, here's an interesting thing to track down at Sundance. It's called Wild Wild Country. It's about one of those sort of hippie Indian, and I mean namaste.
Okay.
Communes that a very, very rich Indian leader bought some land in Oregon and built a empire. And just, you know, with that, I mean, I'm talking buildings and church and recreation halls and airport. They had their own airport. So, I mean, this was really, he had $100 million to play with. And he had literally thousands of followers. And this really, maybe, just could have worked if it wasn't for, you know, political infighting. And that's what brought them down. And I saw it as a 6 2/3 hour film. That's a lot. Straight, no breaks. But it is broken up into a 6-part documentary film. And it's fascinating. If you're from Oregon, you know exactly what I'm talking about because it was big in the news. You know, they were accused of poisoning people at restaurants just before the election so that they could gain a position in the, you know, state senate.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and then it slowly unwinds. And when the leader admits there was what he thought criminal activity by his secretary, that's the big mistake because that gave the keys to the kingdom to the FBI.
Right.
That statement right there. And so it all unwinds and just dissolves. And they ended up in India. And a few of the followers followed him. And they tracked down all of these people and interviewed them. It's absolutely fascinating. It's still going on today. They still have a big following in India. Mostly in India.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Wild, wild country. I'm going to track it down and rewatch it. Maybe one episode at a time this time.
Right.
6 hours is a bit long. The last film I'm going to speak about is Catcher Was a Spy. And it's a film about Mo Berg, who was a baseball player. And he was a catcher.
Okay.
And he spoke 7 languages. And the OSS, which is the predecessor of the CIA, thought it would be a good idea to hire him and have him infiltrate into Italy and combat the forces there and try to distract one of the inventors of the atomic bomb on the German side, Werner Heisenberg, who, if you're a physicist, you know Heisenberg's principle, famous for that. Well, he was leading the atomic war effort for the Germans. And so his mission was to simply kill him. So it's a rather engaging reenactment about him trying to get and infiltrate into Germany, or at least into Italy where the war was being fought, and try to create a plot to kill him. And I'm not going to reveal the ending of the film because no one knows it, really. And so it's an interesting story that nobody's ever heard. Done.
Fascinating.
Deal.
All right. So we're going to play, at this point, our iTick section for this episode.
Okay.
This episode will feature Jordan Olson. All right. We call this part of the podcast iTick. We ask everybody the same six questions in an effort to find out what makes them tick. So for our guest today, tell me your name and what you do.
So my name is Jordan Olson. I am a recent college graduate. Right now I'm working on getting into graduate school. I've studied psychology, and so my work revolves around that. Right now I'm a behavioral technician at an autistic school. It's actually, you've probably seen it, it's down the street. It's called Clear Horizons. Well, the building is called Clear Horizons Academy. The school I work for is the Utah Autism Academy.
Okay.
So I work with autistic kids. I get to play. It's a lot of fun. Psychology is cool.
Interesting. So tell us your earliest memory.
I remember a time when I was about 3 or 4 when, for some reason, I wanted to make a rocket ship out of paper. But I wanted to make a rocket ship that I could stand inside and like ride around in, like, as if it were like a car or something. And so I imagined building this, like, you know, standard looking rocket ship and then cutting out holes for my legs so that I could hold it up and run around in it. And I remember standing on a single, like, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and like tracing my feet so I knew where to cut the holes, like being 4, not knowing how to do this. And I wanted to make a school bus too for my sister because she was in school. And I never got past there being a ton of computer paper all over the floor, with some of them having feet traced out over them where I was supposed to cut the holes.
Tell us a story from your childhood that's influenced your life, maybe something you haven't shared often.
I remember there being a time in like early middle school where I started making comic books. And there, at first I started like drawing comics, and I started doing that because I liked reading Captain Underpants, and they had like their little like comics within the book issues, and I thought they were funny, and so I would try and make comics similarly, but about like a superhero. And then from then, I started making a comic with my friends where I would, during our recess hour, I would take pictures with a digital camera I had and then edit them in MS Paint. And then I had some software where you could put it into like comic book type sheets and then print out like issues. And that was one of the first times I remember like being creative, coming up with my own characters, and also being funny for other people. Like, I definitely remember growing up that I wanted to be the funny guy who could make anybody laugh and would like entertain, and I'm kind of a people pleaser already, so I want other people to like me and to listen to me and stuff. And so I remember making these comics in like the 7th, 8th grade, and it was of my friend being a character called Moose Man. And I remember like making these comics, and I would like waste a bunch of ink printing them in like full color, and I'd like show them to my friends. And that was, it's one of the first times that I remember like making something to show to other people to get them to laugh and to like, and it kind of like got me friends. I like talked to people that I wouldn't normally otherwise. And so I think that's kind of, I think to me, influential, because it's kind of one of the first memories of me doing something that I like, which is coming up with something funny to make other people laugh and then to like build relationships from that.
Cool. Share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
I grew up listening to limited music, just basically just my parents' music. I didn't really have friends introduce me to music until like high school, like maybe freshman year. But as I started to, as they showed me music, and as I listened to like podcasts and other people talk about music that they liked, I remember one podcast introducing me to the Aquabats, and they have since become my favorite band. Just because it's everything I like about like music, and everything I like about like their like the Aquabats as performers, it's just like totally my thing, because they're like have these like the superhero persona that they do, and the songs about ridiculous things like, you know, a girl from Mars or cats or pizza day or, you know, fighting sharks, just like this really ridiculous stuff, and the songs are upbeat and fun, and they, you know, went on to like make a TV show and everything, and those episodes, you know, it's kind of got like this Adam West Batman feel to it and stuff. And I think it just like really kind of vibes with me. It kind of like, I feel like it kind of like sums me up as a person, like this kind of like fun, upbeat, weird thing. And I guess I still listen to them. I still like love all their songs. And I think it's, I know a lot of people are kind of like, oh, that's weird. Like, we grew out of that years ago, weirdo. But that's definitely like the first time I really like found a band and like super connected to it. Like, okay, like this is like music I want to follow and keep up with. And like speaks to me on the nice, weird level.
Share with us a piece of media that's been highly influential in your life.
I have really been digging all these Marvel movies ever since they started in 2008 with that first Iron Man movie. I've just been so in love with everything that Marvel has been putting out on screen. It's become a series that I've like, you know, it's fun to keep up with. It's fun to like be involved. And I feel like not just like watching them, but it has affected me in a lot of ways. It's helped me develop a lot of new hobbies. I think I've watching those movies and seeing how cool they are will get me interested in the comics, and then reading the comics, I really like the art style, so it's, you know, helped me get into drawing. Like, I've been drawing since middle school because of these movies that have come out and like getting me into superheroes. And later on, like seeing all the stuff and going to Comic-Con and seeing how big it gets with everybody, you know, introducing me to the conventions. And then from there, like, it helped, I've been getting into like cosplay, like making my costumes. And then from there, it's been like a whole like new can of worms there with like learning how to make stuff and teaching myself how to do things on YouTube and like trying new things, taking classes, like all this stuff. Like, you know, they're movies, they're fun to watch, but it has turned into so many different hobbies for me and helped me develop all these like different skills that I would not have otherwise, that I feel like it is a kind of a big part of who I am. I know it's like, oh, there's so many superhero movies and they keep pumping them out, and it's like, how many more superhero movies can we get? Like, I cannot get enough of it because it is so good, and I feel like they're doing a great job. And it is, I don't know, I guess it's weird to say it, but yeah, it's helped me to become a different person than I think it would have been otherwise, just because of that cool, like the aesthetic, just, it's a really cool influence.
Awesome. Tell us about your passion and why you do it.
I really like building stuff, and I've thought about that recently as I've been, so I mentioned that I was applying to grad schools, and so part of it is writing like a statement of purpose and trying to, you know, tell schools who you are or whatever. Anyways, I've realized that a lot of what I like to do involves building things and sharing it with other people. So that comes in, it's anything from like Legos to sewing to IKEA furniture. I like taking things like pieces and putting them together to make something cool or interesting or different. And so that applies to a lot of things, a lot of my hobbies primarily. I like to take what's there and make something different or interpret it differently or put a humorous spin on it. I also am really passionate about helping people. I've wanted to have a job in the helping profession for a long time, and so once I started studying psychology in high school, like, that was an instant click for me. I also mentioned that I am a people pleaser, and so I do like, so like humor, talking to other people, helping people is just get a huge kick out of it because it's cool to make an impact on the world. And so I want to, at the end of my life, be able to kind of see how things have been different or have turned out differently because I had the capacity to step in and do something. So, that kind of sounds vain, like, oh, at the end of my life, I want to just see how great I was. But I do like helping people, and I do like making other people happy, and so that's why I do what I do.
Jordan, what makes you tick?
I think what makes me tick is I like finding humor in life. I think I want life to be interesting, and when it's not, then I'll do something about it.
Awesome. All right, Jordan, thanks for sharing all that with us. Thanks for coming in and,
yeah, no problem,
and being interviewed. And
that was fun.
Really appreciate it when people take time and do this with me, because we learn about each other and then we get to share it with everybody, and it's
all
fun.
Those people in Japan.
Yeah, all them too. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised. I didn't know he was into the psychology stuff. I just knew him as a guy that draws comics at the thing I go to.
Huh. All right.
So tell us a little bit about the early days of the Neon Trees.
Well, I discovered the Neon Trees back in, I'm guessing, 06, something like that.
Okay.
They were playing at a local venue called Velour. And Corey Fox, the manager over there, he asked me to be, as he commonly does, asked me to be a judge in Battle of the Bands.
Okay.
And it's always during finals week, it seems.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, I cannot do Monday through Friday, but I will take the Saturday post. And that's, of course, the best of the best. And, you know, of course, the best bands of the entire week get on stage. And Corey knows how to, he knows how to put together a show, I will say. So the first band got on, and I thought they did really well. So, you know, you got to start easy and, you know, give sixes and sevens. And Next band gets on, they get eights. Next band gets on, they get nines. Next band gets on, and I'm like, and wow, they were the winners of Thursday night. So, I mean, gosh, they get tens, almost, nines and tens. Then the winners of Friday night get on, Neon Trees, and they blew a hole in the ceiling. They turned that entire place into a mosh pit. And if you want to sit there and rank energy level of audience, literally was an 11. I was super impressed. I'm like, wow, I've never seen a local band command a crowd the way they did. And so I turned in my judging sheet and said, here, add those up. I'm going to go back and meet the band. Mm-hmm. So I went back there and they were in the green room and I said, hey, do you guys have a CD? You know, and I kind of was like, I don't care what the answer is. If it's yes, I'd like to buy it. If it's no, I'd like to record it.
Right.
And so their answer was, no, man, we've been meaning to make a CD. And I'm like, well, I have a recording studio. How about we do something together? And they didn't say no. So we did. And about 2 weeks later, we began recording the first album, which I think was called Becoming Different People. But yeah, it was self-released. And only a scant few hundred copies of that were released. Shall we play a track from that?
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to play you a song. It's one of my favorites off of this record that we recorded. It's called Up Against the Glass. And I don't want to reveal too much, but it's talking about frames go by quickly, that kind of thing.
Quicker than we can, so we want up against the glass. They told you so, they told you so. Well, they told you so, they told you so. Well, they told you so, they told you so. Well, they told you so.
That ah in the beginning was probably about 10 Tyler Glenns, because I kept sending him back to the microphone, because really this album, and you're going to love this, this album was intended to be released in surround sound. So all of my requests, okay, go back and do that again, go back and do that again. Of course, that built up a wonderful stereo image.
Right.
But my intent was truly to build enough tracks up so that I can mix it into surround sound.
Well, I need that.
Okay, we should collaborate on that, because it would be fun. Anyway, my girlfriend Heidi Markworth made the suggestion, why don't we do a projector sound effect at the beginning of the song, because it's, you know, frames go by quickly and all that. So it's like frames of film. And I thought, oh, that's great. We could use, you know, like a projector sound effect. And so I went through a list of film sound effects with projectors in it. And the 16mm one just sounded grainy enough to me. So we put that sound effect in, and then again, at the end of the piece, you can hear it flipping off the end of it. So the song literally begins and ends, and that was her idea to do that.
That's awesome. Early Neon Trees that nobody's heard.
Almost nobody. the 300 or 400 people that own the CD.
All right, well, Wiz, thanks for coming and being on the show.
So that's kind of fun. But, you know, that shows you I've got tons and tons of found audio, as you call it.
Oh, so much.
And I intend to be back on a future episode.
Oh, we'll definitely have you on again. Thanks for coming down.
All right.
And recording. It's been a good time.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys. So it's...